This is Cherise Kenyon and you're listening to the Beauty Me podcast, all about beauty beyond the BS. This week, it's a brand new series. It's called The Week in Beauty, and it's a series that will see me just curating the latest beauty news that's caught my eye. It's something that I always try to comment on, but I hate squeezing it into the Friday episodes. I try to reserve that day for, you know, the guest episodes or my deep dive. So having a separate episode, a separate series, will hopefully give me a chance to dig a little deeper into some of the news stories and share the headlines with you. Today's subjects are what I'm calling severe beauty from the Golden Globes, Diana Ross for Saint Laurent, Gen Alpha and their love for Sephora, Drunk Elephant in particular. And I'm also going to share some beauty trend predictions for the year from the Insights team at Scene Group. So first up, let's look at the Golden Globes red carpet beauty. I did four videos on different actresses for my coverage because these four stood out to me for very specific reasons. For instance, I chose to do a video about Ayo Edebiri, star of one of my favorite shows, The Bear, because I just love her in the show. She plays my favorite character, Sydney, and she's that character that everybody is rooting for. And also, when she's not in The Bear, she's actually hilarious. If you Google her or go on YouTube, you'll find a lot of funny performances from Ayo. She's a great comedian, as well as being a great actress. And what I'm really excited about is the fact that she won a Golden Globe on the night. She won Best Performance by a Female Actor for playing Sydney in The Bear. And her co-star, Jeremy Allen White, you know, the guy who you've been seeing running around in his little teeny weeny Calvin Klein pants the past few weeks, he also won Best Actor, and the show itself won Best Comedy. So I love that for them. And what I also like about Ayo is when I've seen kind of interviews with her or behind the scenes, she's definitely got this, I feel a lot of people that are in comedy, they can play up to it, but when it comes to them themselves, they might be a little bit more introverted or shy. And I think that also came across in her style. So the reason I included her in the Golden Globes is because I felt like she seems to be really finding her feet. She's been wearing a lot of Prada lately. And on the night, she wore this Prada red satin column dress. It had a long train right at the back, so you wouldn't see it unless you turned all the way around. She had these matching satin heels and a really chic bob. And overall, the look was very reminiscent of the girl bands of the 1960s, such as the Supremes. The other videos that I did were on Dua Lipa in that stunning black velvet Schiaparelli. Honestly, I loved it. And I also covered the gorgeous Greta Lee of the hit film Past Lives. Greta is a Loewe spokesmodel, and I loved her floating parachute silk dress. But for me, it was the makeup by Naoko Shinto. Oh, it was just so stunning. And I have actually slipped into her DMs to say, would you want to come on the show? Because she's got this lightness of touch and Greta Lee's face is literally glowing. I know that she used, for the Golden Globe, she used La Mer skincare. She just seems to have this very light touch, and I'm just obsessed with Greta Lee. I'm fangirling here. She's the one, by the way, that I'm really excited to see on the Oscars red carpet. But it was my final video, which was on poker face actress Natasha Lyonne, that went viral on TikTok and Instagram because, side note, Instagram does not really support my content. But this has gone over 155,000 views now on Instagram, which is amazing considering it's my content. It's not just me sharing somebody else's. And it just really got me thinking. I think it did about 40K on TikTok, which is good. It's not viral, but it's still good. And the amount of comments that I had that were just like, why is nobody else speaking about Natasha's look? Why is everybody focused on everyone else and they're not seeing how amazing Natasha looks? So I was just like, okay, let me think, why is that? And I think it all comes down to the fact that even in the video, I label her look as severe beauty. And for me, it's reminiscent of people like Daphne Guinness, she's somebody who's her own style influencer. I mean, look her up. For years, she's been wearing this very severe black and white hair. She wears a lot of Alexander McQueen. She wears a lot of things that are not considered classically beautiful. They're quite in your face. They've got an edge. And I guess even though we feel like we've moved on so much, I think this severe beauty or austere or stern even, the majority doesn't really want it, I guess. I think the majority perhaps wants what all of the glossy magazines and many of the online titles are here to push, which is that very pretty aesthetic, pretty woman, youthful woman. And Natasha's Schiaparelli beaded look, I guess it didn't really fit into that aesthetic. The dress itself was made of thousands of tiny round beads and bugle beads. I think they were white, maybe like an off-white. And because there were so many of them, they really moved around her body. So when she moved, they kind of shook and shimmied, kind of like something that you might have seen in the 60s. The top of the dress had a corset to it, so it was very fitted. But instead of it going straight across Natasha's chest from, say, armpit to armpit, instead it had these peaks or points that swooped up from each armpit right up to her ears. So it was like these pointy frame that went around her face. So from any angle, her face would be shaped by these two points. So it was a really amazing blend of definitely 60s style, which her makeup artist James Kaliados confirmed. He said the makeup look was all about 60s Hollywood glamour, but it had this edge to it. I guess it wasn't a friendly dress, you know. It was very different to what everyone else was wearing. Again, it was Schiaparelli, but it was completely different to Dua Lipa's one, which was all about showing her curves. It wasn't about adding curves or softness or femininity. And I felt it was quite refreshing that so many people were like, I love this, she looks amazing, because it wasn't the typical. And I think anyone that moves away from the typical, they should be seen. But of course, as with anything that kind of has a little blow up moment on social media, you're also going to get negative comments. And when it came to the Natasha video, who has a very slight body type, there were lots of comments on her weight and lots of people crediting Ozempic. You know, the kind of people that just comment, Ozempic, the Ozempic's killing it. It was just very people commenting as if they know her and they know her, you know, personal information. And if there's one thing I want people to gather from this show, I am not here to criticize, let alone comment on somebody's body shape. I said it in the last episode last year. I did a whole episode about weight. It's not my business. It's none of your business. I would also rather deal in facts as much as possible. I know a lot of my podcasts and videos, it is me interpreting something, but I'm not here to interpret why somebody weighs what they weigh. And I just think, why do you need to go there? You know, there was one person, I did say something back on Instagram. I just said, this is not a body shaming page. Like, make the Ozempic comment, fine. But then you're saying she's too thin. Well, too thin for who? Like, who are you? I just think body positivity should go across the spectrum. It shouldn't just be reserved for people that are more my size or bigger. I'm just like, just leave it alone. And also, you just don't know what somebody's mental state is. I don't know what her weight is about. I don't know if she's happy with her weight. It's not my business. And also, her business is to promote her show and her persona. Whether it's a real persona or not, she's there to work. Before I move on to the next segment, I did want to bring up one key negative that came up from the Golden Globes overall, and that was the public outcry about E! News not showing the red carpet. I'm not sure if you're aware, but E! Is like, you know, the entertainment channel. It's the celebrity channel. I think we have access to it over here in the UK, but it's huge anyway. And for years, it has gone live from the red carpet at most of the award shows. And I think it's become part of the theatre of watching the awards. You know, if you're remotely into fashion, beauty or celebrity, you're probably going to watch the E! Red Carpet. In the States, the Globes has always been on NBC since 1996, but this year was the first time that CBS showed it, and the channel is already boasting that it's had a 50% increase in viewers. So that is interesting. It means more people at home with, you know, standard televisions, I guess, are watching the Golden Globes. So that's great. But aside from the coverage jumping channels, it also felt to me like the industry, two industries, were trying to like take ownership over what the public gets to see. Much of the coverage was shown on Variety, which is the self-proclaimed most authoritative and trusted source of entertainment business news. They're online and they also have a print magazine. And also the fashion industry title, Women's Wear Daily, aka WWD, they also got quite a few red carpet interviews. What we did get was a digital pre-show red carpet on YouTube, co-hosted by Variety's Mark Malkin and Entertainment Tonight's Rachel Smith. And I have to point out here, Mark from Variety, he received a lot of criticism because he was just too, I couldn't even watch a lot of him. I felt like he was too gushing, but yet not engaged. He was ill-informed. He asked stupid questions. I'm sorry. Like, I think, who was it? Riley Keough. He's like, dark hair. What's that about? She was completely thrown in so many of his interviews. You could see the person being like, I need to be nice to this guy, but what the hell is he asking me this for? It was a real wasted opportunity. And I'm just going to say I should have been there. Like, come on. Mark is clearly not his calling. I didn't watch any of Rachel, so I can't comment on Rachel. But hopefully things improve next year. But I feel like if this is the mood going forward, is Hollywood, is fashion trying to bring back that separation between the celebrity and the public? Or is it a move towards making people pay for access? Given the rise in subscriptions and paid content, such as newsletters and Patreon content over the past few years, it wouldn't surprise me, but it would sadden me if everything came with a cost. That being said, you could look at my videos where I describe each of the four looks I've mentioned over on Beauty Me Podcast on Instagram or my TikTok, Charisse Kenyon. So let me know what you think. Next, I wanted to touch on the news of Diana Ross as one of the new Saint Laurent faces for the French fashion house's Spring 24 campaign. Diana Ross, if you don't know, is a diva in her own right, with a career that spans more than six decades. In her early days, she was the lead singer of the Supremes, one of the world's most successful girl bands ever, still, before going on to have a seriously successful solo singing career. In 1972, she won a Golden Globe and was nominated for an Oscar for her portrayal of the iconic Billie Holiday in Lady Sings the Blues, which you can watch on YouTube, by the way, found it yesterday. And for that, she made history as the first African-American woman to receive an Oscar nomination for a debut film performance. Side note, Diana is also the mother of one of my favorite style icons, Tracee Ellis Ross. I love that woman. And I could really see Tracee herself appearing in a Saint Laurent campaign. I don't know why they haven't put them together already. I don't know why Tracee hasn't had her own campaign already. I just feel she is just, oh. Well, anyway, I'm not talking about Tracee. I'm talking about Diana. I just say all this to say that Diana Ross is more than qualified to appear in an ad campaign. Her status is beyond that of an ad campaign. It's almost silly, like, it's like, why wouldn't she? But why should she? She doesn't need to be in an ad campaign. But what I love is the love that Saint Laurent designer Anthony Vaccarello is showing simply by choosing Diana. He could have chosen someone a quarter of her age that has millions of social media followers. So I feel there's just a respect there. And there's also a history too. Back in the 1970s, Diana was a longtime friend of the original designer and founder of the brand, Yves Saint Laurent himself. And in 2003, she wore a stunning red dress by Tom Ford for Yves Saint Laurent to the Met Gala. The theme that year was Goddess, the classical mode. And of course, it was very fitting for a diva. I'll share a link to the video I made on this news in the show notes so you can see just how gorgeous the shade of red was. And of course, the image of Diana for Saint Laurent. While I usually prefer not to focus on age when it comes to women, because I find it is almost always used as a criticism or a benchmark against us, I think it makes sense to mention here that Diana will be 80 this March. And in this case, age feels relevant because it is important to have women this age being seen. Like, she's going to be 80. What other 80-year-olds are you seeing, even in your daily life, let alone on the cover of a magazine or in an ad campaign for a fashion brand? I actually posted a poll recently on Instagram where I asked my audience about how women of 50 are perceived. So whether they're over 50 themselves or how they feel women older than them are perceived. And I'm going to share the results of that in a future episode because there's a lot a lot more to unpack, as they say. But the top two votes came in and said women over 50 were retouched too much and unseen. So I'd given those as options amongst some others. For context, I actually posted this poll because everybody had been talking about the Pamela Anderson for fashion brand Proenza Shula adverts and how she appears to be makeup free. I think Pamela appearing makeup free and Diana as a 79-year-old are both important and necessary images for us all to see. But like I said, I'm going to expand upon that point in a future episode because I really want to go further into that Pamela Anderson conversation. So just stay tuned for that. If you haven't followed the show on Spotify or Apple, now would be a really good time to hit follow or subscribe so that you definitely get that next episode. Next, let's briefly, because I could be here all day on this one, let's briefly look at the Gen Alpha skincare takeover. I don't mean that Gen Alpha are going to making their own skincare. I mean, they're really getting into loving it. When we talk about Gen Alpha, we're looking at the generation following Gen Z, which includes all children born in or after 2010. Specifically for this story, we're kind of talking more about children who are 10 to 13 years old, and they are invading all the stores, particularly Sephora. The particular brands that the kids are apparently loving include Bioma, one of my faves, Laneige, definitely a fave, Glow Recipe, also love that brand. And I feel that those three in particular definitely have colourful, attractive, kind of solid packaging in common. But for some reason, it's Drunk Elephant that's actually really got the kids' attention. And apparently it's really seen a spike in profits, particularly when it comes to their smoothies. They often encourage users to mix a cocktail of Drunk Elephant serums, creams and oils. And it appears that these children are actually going in store and making these little smoothies, which, you know, it kind of makes sense because kids love to play, right? I just think something has happened. Obviously, they're a new generation. And unfortunately for many, it seems the kids are enjoying it a little too much. Just go to TikTok and you're going to find a slew of videos, mostly criticizing and mocking kids, actually. And I felt that some of them were really out of order. They were just like, it made me think, were you never a kid? The way they are talking down about children, like saying, I mean, some are funny, I'm not going to lie. Some videos are saying they're feral and they're this and that. But others are like, the way these children speak, they just don't sound very smart. And I'm just like, wow, were you a child once? Don't get me wrong. I'm the first person. Like, I don't want kids. I don't have kids. No intention of having them. I love my nieces and nephews. I've got 13. But when I go to a shop, I mean, I went to the Gap the other day. We call it Gap here, really. And there were four kids racing through the store. It annoyed me. So I can only imagine what it's like if you put expensive skincare products and makeup in their hands and they're splodging it everywhere. I can imagine that's annoying, especially for the employees. And there are a few videos on TikTok where it's employees speaking about this. Apparently, all these little skincare lovers are just going in and they're not only touching all of the testers when it comes to skincare and makeup, but they're also opening up the packages. So let's say you buy a Fenty, for whatever reason, a Fenty lip gloss pack, you know, and there's three in it. They'll be opening those packages to take out one of the colours to play with. And yeah, they're creating a lot of mess. Apparently they're rude. But one of my favourite and often hilarious YouTube creators, James Welsh, he really tells it like it is. And he did a video all about this. And I'll share a link for that in the show notes because you need to watch it. He talked about the Sephora kids takeover, specifically with Drunk Elephant in mind. And he was like, aren't all kids annoying? Weren't we annoying? He was like, when you get to that age between, say, 11 and 13, you kind of think you know everything. It's not that big a deal. And I think where the issue lies is many of us in different generations, we're unable to understand. It's like you get older and you forget that you were a kid. So you're looking at these children from this very condescending viewpoint. Yes, you may well have been one of those people like me that made perfume by picking up flower petals from the garden and putting it in a jar with water and some oil and mashing it up, you know, or you might have made a skin scrub from God knows what. I think what's happening here is many of these kids are skipping the DIY stage and they're heading straight to Sephora. So there is this mystified reaction. And I don't get why people are mystified. And I actually do think some of them are quite cruel, because what about the parents? Surely they should be taken to task for A, letting their children buy products that are likely too harsh for their skin, by the way, and B, having so little respect for the stores they're invading. Like, who are the parents that are letting these little girls run everywhere and make TikToks about it? Also, like I said, James's video really hones in on the drunk elephant factor, because it seems the kids have caused a spike in purchasing there. But my final point is one that some are making on TikTok, that children could be missing out on a kind of rite of passage. As one TikToker, amy.xo, spelt amyyy.xo_, said, her path to finding her way in beauty started at Claire's, then it was Ulta, and then Sephora, because it was seen as the pinnacle. I think for many of us here in the UK, it might have been, say, Super Dragon Boots before moving on to department store counters like Debenhams, House of Fraser, then maybe Selfridges, and then, of course, online, Cult Beauty. So I feel like, yeah, I get what she's saying. There's levels to it. But I think those levels would often be dependent on your income. So you may well go from pocket money to weekend jobs to first proper jobs where you're hopefully earning decent money. But for these children, they might be getting very healthy allowances. They don't have to spend on any bills or anything else, do they? Their parents are probably paying their phone bills. So that, why wouldn't that see them spending upwards of $40 on a serum? But the issue comes in is if that's a retinol serum and it's going to damage their skin barrier. So there's a lack of education, but do they need that education? Should they even be thinking about skincare at 10? I would love to know, what do you think? Do you think this is harmless fun? Do your kids buy skincare? Or do you buy your kids skincare? Let me know what you think. And also, should Sephora ban groups of children? Is that the solution? Let me know in the DMs over on my Instagram at Beauty Me Podcast. And if you're listening on Spotify, be sure to get involved in my poll on the show's homepage. Finally, I wanted to share some beauty predictions from one of my favorite newsletters. It's called Scene Works, and it's produced by the Insights team at Scene Group. Their latest newsletter caught my eye because it's a really concise take on 5 2024 beauty trends, and sometimes you just need a concise take. First, the piece talks about AI's impact on fragrance, and it questions whether it can really help brands to create the scents that we're craving. And I think in one sense, AI can be useful because it can literally generate multiple questions, often repetitive but slightly different, which are all aimed at gathering information on personal preferences. But can that same AI be useful when it comes to just making up note combinations? I mean, surely that takes a nose, you know, the people who are hired to create perfumes at all your favorite fragrance brands. Don't you need that very personal human touch? I don't know how AI can help with that part. Next, the piece talks about hyperrealism, and it definitely seems like we're going backwards again. Or, you know, I guess we go around in circles when it comes to beauty. Specifically, the piece is talking about the latest slew of hyperreal filters on TikTok. So apparently we're moving away from actually wanting to see real skin, although we're always saying it. You know, many of us are always saying it anyway. We're moving away from real skin, and now it's real skin, but hyper perfected. So it's realistic, but there are zero flaws. It's real, but it's beyond flawless. So the Scene team thinks that these filters will end up seeing us reaching again for our exfoliating toners, which, to be honest, I've never dropped those. I've really learned the power of exfoliation, but I've moved away from the whole Paula's Choice BHA twice a day, which, by the way, is a lie. I know it says it on the bottle. There's no way you can use that twice a day, every day. It's just impossible. But we'll be reaching for the exfoliating toners once again in the hope of, you know, that very clear glass-like skin, hydrated. And also the Insights team thinks that we will start to experiment with buildable foundations that are virtually undetectable. So I'm here for that. Recently, I've been experimenting just the past week I am not wearing foundation. I'm only wearing foundation if I go out or if I'm filming a video. And I credit actress Jessica Chastain with this. She recently did a Harper's Bazaar go to bed with me. So she was taking off her skincare and taking off a little touch of foundation and redoing her skincare, sorry. And she said she doesn't wear foundation anymore. She only wears it for the red carpet. And I just thought, wow, her skin did look amazing. And I was like, yeah, if I go out in the day or I just want a touch of something, I'm not putting foundation on, but I am doing mascara, I'm doing my brows, and I'm doing a lip, and I'm doing some blush. And I've really liked it. It just feels like I'm doing less. So I really like that. But according to this piece, that's not the way to go. I need to be looking for that very flawless skin. So we'll see how this hyperrealism trend works out. The next subject in the newsletter is the lure of ultra luxury, which sees us willingly spending more and more on our skincare habits. I think what we're going to see is that the gap between affordable and expensive is really going to get much wider. I think many of us will actually change our goalposts when it comes to what we view as what is expensive today. So I think we are going to spend more. I don't like the sound of that because I think it's quite, you know, it's down to what you earn, isn't it? Which many of us, we don't have that luxury to consider ultra luxury. Do you know what I mean? So it's interesting. I think a real divide will occur. It's something I've actually been talking about in my day-to-day work as well. I've been interviewing a lot of hairdressers lately for client content, and so many of them are bringing up these trends that focus around money. So we've got old money styling, which often refers to men. So, you know, we had the pandemic, we had the guys playing with length and letting their hair grow and colouring it. But now they're going back to that classic Hollywood look from the 40s and 50s, very kind of dapper, gentlemanly, neat. And when it comes to women, there's this talk of new money color. For a while, we've been talking about money pieces, which are like these big slabs of color in the hair. But new money color is very much about looking expensive. And it's all about these glossing treatments that will look expensive and probably end up costing you quite a bit. I think, you know, we're all going through a recession. The price for everything is going up. And I do think the brands are being quite cheeky. I know the supply chain thing, that issue, you know, they have to put their prices up. But there's also part of me that's like, well, does this mean I should put my prices up as well? Because it just keeps going up the chain. Everyone keeps putting their prices up. And it's like, perhaps brands are only aiming for the 1% or what, whoever's in the 10%. Yeah, so it's quite interesting. I'm intrigued to see how it's going to go, this whole divide. That doesn't mean that I don't like ultra luxury, though. I definitely can appreciate the difference that you might see when it comes to spending more. And I think that's what the key is. It's that you might see it. I think you still need to shop around and find not only the budget that's right for you, but actually really consider what the products are doing for you. The next point in the newsletter is all about bioengineering when it comes to beauty. And it focuses on the fact that lab-grown elements could rule out the need for the harvesting of natural ingredients from often heavily depleted resources. So obviously that is a positive. And the final point from the newsletter is about method styling. So this form of dressing is perhaps best exemplified if you just look back at Barbie actress Margot Robbie. She's been on this never-ending press tour for the box office smash Barbie. And what we've seen is she has wholeheartedly embraced her character at every single event she's been at. Even at the recent Golden Globes after party, Margot still appeared to be in character, wearing a black version of the pink dress she wore to the actual awards that was based on the 1977 superstar Barbie. The newsletter also cites sex education star Gillian Anderson, who wore a white dress embroidered with vulvas to the Golden Globes as a subtle nod to her character in the hit Netflix show. I still need to watch that. Let me know if it's worth it. But essentially, much like method acting, where an actor decides to fully embody a character on and off screen during filming. Although Natalie Portman, the actress, she's recently said method acting is a luxury for women. She literally said it's impossible because of all the demands on her life. And I thought that was really cool that she said that. She was like, it's a luxury for a woman to be a method actor when she's got kids and a relationship. It's almost impossible. But yeah, method styling is about going fully there with a character. And I'm keen to see where this one could lead, because I think brands could get involved if they really kind of thought about it smartly, because you only have to look at how Beyoncé's Renaissance tour had hundreds of thousands, if not millions. I mean, I don't know how many people paid for a Beyoncé ticket, but you saw all of these people literally raiding supply stores for silver paint and fashion stores for silver accessories. So you can really see how method styling could play out in day-to-day life. That is it for this week. It's the first week in beauty. I would love to know what you think about this type of episode. And also, just to point out, if you've seen my Instagram posts on my personal account, Charisse Kenyon, you might be wondering, why have I not spoken about the story on the advertising standards agency banning the Calvin Klein advert that features FK Twigs? But just to let you know, it's coming. That is a much bigger story that needs some exploration, some context, especially when it comes to the history of the Calvin Klein brand itself. So be sure to follow or subscribe to the show wherever you listen, because this Friday, the entire episode will be devoted to the double standards of the ASA when it comes to how it's treated the FK Twigs image. In the meantime, feel free to get in touch over on Instagram at beautymepodcast. Email me, beautymepodcast@gmail.com, if you've got any guest suggestions or feedback in general. Also, don't forget to get involved in the poll on the show's Spotify page. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time.